Hey, Internet. Join us here at Darkside Records August 29th from 9 p.m. to just a little over midnight for the release of the new Tool record, Fear Inoculum. We're going to have fun, horrible karaoke, and I'm told Maynard trivia. So gooch up and get your Caduceus on and join us for the new record available at midnight, August 30th.
Hey, this is Mike from All Out War. We just put out a record called Crawl Among the Filth on Unbeaten Records. Come and buy it now.
Hey, Internet. We are having another edition of our world-famous indoor punk rock flea market, also known as Patch Adam. Swamp Selso? Tiffy of Swamp Ass. Anyway, this is an indoor market that is dedicated to DIY, to punk rock, to patches, enamel pins. We're going to have awesome local vendors with original art, patches and enamel pins. We're going to have some food. We're going to have live music. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you enjoy patches, if you need some new threads, maybe you want some new vintage band t-shirts, maybe you just want to support some cool Hudson Valley artists, come out. It'll be happening from noon until 5, September 21st. Come on down to Darkside Records. Support your scene. Support your local independent record store. And get some cool shit.
This is the Darkside Records and Gallery Podcast.
Welcome to the Darkside Records Not and Gallery Records Podcast.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm trying to, you know, reshape the intro to get the proper nomenclature for the store.
Does it still say and gallery? A little horse thing?
A little horse thing?
Yeah, before the horse neighs. Oh. It said Dark Side Records and Gallery. Does it still say that?
I don't know.
It might. I don't really know. I don't usually listen.
Hang on. I'm going to go back and listen.
This is the Dark Side Records and Gallery Podcast.
Yeah, still there.
Yep.
Okay. Ah, crap.
Typical.
Oh, I got to re-record all our shit now at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, god damn it.
Branding.
Okay.
Started off on order.
Welcome, then, to the Dark Side Records and Gallery minus the Gallery Podcast.
Is math?
You know, math's not my strong suit.
Oh, I know.
This, of course, is a monthly podcast brought to you by the good folks at Dark Side Records. Of course, located at 611 Dutchess Turnpike in Poughkeepsie. Or on the web at darksiderecords.com. This is a podcast about music, the music industry.
Flatulence.
Okay, I was going to say fart jokes. I like that we're back on the same page.
Okay.
All right. I'm JB.
I'm JJ.
Hey, man.
Hey.
I haven't seen you in a little bit.
I know, I just got back last night.
That's right. You want to tell everybody where you were?
I was in New Orleans for a Record Store Day summer camp for the past week. Hanging out with like 350 other record store owners and all the labels and distributors and people who are involved in the record business.
That's cool.
I had a lot of drinks and I'm very tired.
That was me yesterday as well. So mm-hmm. I think we're on a similar wave. That's why we locked up in the beginning.
Yesterday was the first day I hadn't had anything drinking. 7 days or something like that. It's not my usual streak, actually.
Right, right.
Pretty spaced out, usually. Between the drinks, not mentally.
Whichever. Whatever. Anything to report? Anything good that you want to talk about from that?
Nah, we'll get there. You always come back full of ideas and things that you want to do, improvements, hopefully, that you want to make to the store.
People didn't see that he just did air quotes.
I did air quotes. It's a podcast. It's good for air quotes.
The good visual medium.
Yeah, we made some new label friends, so that's cool. Hopefully we get some more cool shit. That's always my goal, is to make the store better and get more cool things to give away to our friends that come see us.
Sure. Well, and this is we are very happy to have some special guests here for this episode. We have some local boys done good in the metal and hardcore scene. We have two members of All Out War who are here. Hey, y'all.
How's it going?
It's going okay. Hey. Why don't you introduce yourselves? Tell both listeners who you are.
I'm Mike. I sing for All Out War.
And I'm Andy. I play guitar in All Out War.
Cool. Hey, well, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Here.
Thanks for having us.
I guess, why don't you tell listeners who may not have heard of you guys, tell us a little bit about your band.
A little bit about All Out War. Let's say, we've been a band for a long time. So we started in 1991, and we're still here. That's all you need to know.
All right. I've definitely seen All Out War at hardcore shows. Let's see, I moved up to the Hudson Valley 20-something years ago, so I feel like I have regularly seen throughout that time All Out War. But I feel like never personally crossed paths. Like, we've never, like, actually, like, interacted in some capacity. I've played in a whole bunch of really dumb hardcore bands and some not-so-dumb hardcore bands.
What were some bands you were in?
Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, no. We don't. So that's one of the things
that's
off limits.
Let's see. We've got the Dad Umpires.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That one with the elephant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all I got. Band. Yeah, it was an elephant band. It actually just all covers of speeches made by Elephant Man.
That is off limits.
What?
Mike knows that. Do you remember that? Do you remember my weird Elephant Man thing?
No.
That's the one thing in the world that I'm afraid of.
The Elephant Man?
The Elephant Man. I'm not even comfortable with you saying it over and over again.
Well, that's why I brought it up.
Well, you'll be happy to know.
The research team did pretty well.
You did. That's a deep secret. That's
absolutely.
That's a good find.
Thanks, Dave Baccio.
So,
So you're not a fan of Joseph Merrick?
I'm not. I'm getting less and less comfortable
with
the questions.
I'm
regretting saying that everything that there are certain things that weren't off bounds.
We do have it.
I didn't think we were going to go here.
To be fair, Elephant Man doesn't come up very often on our pike. Sorry. He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Yes.
Doesn't come up very often.
Start playing
in our
like the last song on all the Mastodon records.
Yeah, exactly.
The ode to him. Yeah.
To be fair, that's pretty much the main reason I know. That person.
Right.
That's why you formed that band.
That's right. 15 years ago.
That's right.
And got this tattoo of a five-headed elephant.
Wow. That doesn't bother me.
Five elephants doesn't bother you?
No. Just,
if I throw the word man on the end of it.
David Lynch movie, yeah.
I've never seen
the David
Lynch movie.
But you're fine with elephants?
Oh, yeah. It's not
the
elephants.
The animal elephants you're okay
elephants
with.
I'm fine with. Yeah.
I never knew any of this, so it's all
you
good.
Did know this because we
remember.
Were... Because I joined the band in 98, and my first tour with you guys, I told you that, and everybody, like, thought it was funny. And then we were, like, in a mall in the middle of nowhere, and you guys came, like, running, saying, like, there's a Halloween mask shop down there, and they have it in the window. So, like, very early on, these
this
guys...
This must have really scarred you, because I
know!
It did. And these guys were... For a bunch of tough guys, they were really sensitive to the one thing that I told them that bothered me.
Meaning, when you say they were sensitive about it, meaning they cared and respected you?
Oh, yeah. They,
and
they,
were very
yeah,
nurturing?
Because, like, yeah, because normally they would probably, like, lead me to it. And,
right, or leave an elephant man, like,
yeah,
head
yeah,
in the van.
But they made sure that I didn't go
didn't.
Around it. I'm still surprised that you didn't.
Wow.
I feel like this is going to ruin that.
This is going to open up a thing
a
I never meant to do.
Than I thought.
If we end the band, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't think this
well,
would...
Well, we didn't used to have phones, and, you know, now you could just look it up on the phone, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my weird thing.
Maybe we shouldn't give them the Babar parting gifts that we had planned for them.
I don't like Babar, but for different reasons. Not afraid of him.
I feel like we...
You're more of a Magilla man, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you... I don't even know where to go from that. So y'all have been a band since 91, officially. There's a guy apparently gardening.
Vacuuming outside.
Yeah, right outside the door.
Coming up on your Pearl anniversary.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, 30 years.
30 years. 30 years, holy shit.
I'm coming up on my first anniversary, which I think is paper.
First wedding anniversary,
congratulations.
Yeah.
We had a... when I was visiting my family over the weekend, we were talking about what anniversary is what, and we couldn't figure out what your first anniversary actually is.
I think it is paper. Right.
So what do I get my wife?
Something.
Old newspaper.
Cash.
Done.
Piles of cash.
Perfect. I hope she listens. Sorry if I spoiled the gift there, baby.
Old newspaper might not make it to year two.
Yeah.
Well, you can cook on it. That sounds romantic.
Yes.
Oh, I could find the newspaper from the day we got married.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
That's pretty good.
Something like that. Something thoughtful like that.
Yeah, something that's like a horrible headline, you know? Like.
Yeah, exactly. So, you guys have been a band since 91, and you've been a Hudson Valley band pretty much that whole time.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. We've had people from all over in the band. Like, we started out, it was Chris from Marauder, who was from Brooklyn. You know, he and I started the band. And then we had Joe Brantz of 40, who was in Dark Side, is also in the Carnivore AD band. So he played, and that's when we were practicing in Manhattan for a while. But other than that, yeah, Hudson Valley.
Cool, cool. My questions are not going to be as good because I'm also hungover. So if you want to jump in at any point, you go for it.
I'm the least prepared for this.
We're the least hungover out of the four of us, I guess, right?
I don't feel hungover. I just feel exhausted.
I got a good night's sleep last night.
Do you guys still do you party as a band when you're on the road?
Some of us do.
Some of us, yeah.
I don't, but some of us do.
Okay.
You know, I guess three out of five.
Yeah, sometimes four.
Yeah.
It's a Meatloaf song.
Yeah. Now I'm hungry.
You know, the last thing I want to do is wake up on the road hungover. I mean, I've outgrown that. Like, that's not my idea of a good time, sitting in a hot van, you know, hungover.
For sure.
Years ago, I was into it. Not so much anymore.
I find I don't really get hungover anymore.
Oh, my!
Despite how much I drink, I feel pretty much okay.
Yeah.
You've reached a certain level of success.
I just feel exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, not hungover, like headache hungover, or just hungover like I don't feel like doing anything.
Mm-hmm. This past Monday, I did have a headache all day, but I wouldn't really consider that hungover. I felt fine.
Yeah.
Just a persistent headache.
I think that's a form of hangover.
Sure. But, like, you know, I was functioning. I gave a presentation. Everything was fine. I had lunch.
Yeah, we're pretty tame on the road. It's
business on the road?
It's, you know,
I wouldn't say it's business. I mean, no. We have a good time. The drinking thing. Not for me, so.
It gets harder, I think, the older you get with, I have trouble, like, I have to eat a little, you know, every couple of days I have to eat something good or, so I feel like the better you treat yourself on the road, the older you get, maybe it's, makes it a little more easy, you know, makes you be able to focus on the show, the reason that you're there a little bit more.
Sure. I bring a lot of food. That's my move.
Well, I always say that I'm going to, but we never do. Even to the airport, eating $15 breakfast sandwiches at the
That's
airport.
What I usually
say. Yeah.
You know, $15 angry sandwiches made by angry people.
We got some angry sandwiches
I found that
last time.
When angry people make your food, it's sometimes better at the airport. I don't know why. Lately, angry people have been making good sandwiches.
You had that really angry lady at the deli.
And she made a great
sandwich.
Deli,
yeah.
It was awesome.
Which airport?
Was that Newark? I think it was Newark.
It was Newark. It's hard to remember because they have such equally great food at Newark and JFK.
Yeah. It's better than the food I had in the airplane.
Is that sarcasm?
No.
Really?
It is not better than your least favorite meal that you've ever had in your life. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? I'm flattered that I was there for it.
My least favorite thing was vegan hamburgers in Finland.
Yep.
I'm still mad about that.
Yeah.
Because I was promised that they were going to be great and they were going to be the best thing I ever had.
I feel like you had a little bit of a flashback.
I had to wait a long time for those.
Yeah.
And they were awful.
They were awful. And it was a double one, too.
And I'm still mad.
Well, when we just went, when we were in Quebec.
I'll never trust Theo again.
No.
He's our tour manager in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he promised great hamburgers, vegan hamburgers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They weren't great.
Is it because you guys are vegan?
No.
Or just because he had them?
No,
to
he just told us
to
that they were going to be great. But, I mean, yeah, I was definitely open to it. I'm open to anything, but they're not very good.
No, these were terrible. And then when we were just away, they tried to give you a vegan hamburger at the A&W place.
Yeah, I was scared of it.
You had a little bit of a flashback.
No, I didn't want to eat it.
Well, you'll be relieved or terrified to know that as of this past Thursday, Burger King now offers the Impossible Burger.
Which I'm interested in
trying. I'm interested.
I would say it's worth trying. I was there opening day as a hungry vegan.
5 a.m.
Banging on the door. I also realized I was going to call and make sure they had it, and then I realized I was like, does anyone call Burger King ever? Like, is that a thing? Or do they not even know they have a phone? And if I called, they'd be like, hello?
You'd be embarrassed to say where you were calling from if you were here.
So what's your take on the Impossible Burger as a vegan?
My take on it is I'm a fan of Impossible, the company, and the things that they make.
Okay. Because there's controversy surrounding these, right? Some vegans are not happy.
There's controversy with Burger King. We're never happy. Let's be real.
Not happy with the Impossible Burger specifically because of... So explain this, or maybe you can help enlighten
me. Maybe, which is going to speak to vegans as well, which part of it are vegans not happy with?
Well, isn't it, like, I've read certain articles, like, the way they're made, is there controversy surrounding that? You know what I'm talking about? Like, there's something in the practices that, how they make them, there's an argument on whether they're vegan or not.
I haven't heard that. I did read a thing, because, of course, I'm part of a vegan Facebook group for the Hudson Valley, JJ shaking his head, and they were talking about people were posting being excited for it, and people were, like, slamming it on all sides. And one person said the reason they were slamming it is because there's animal testing involved in Impossible.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Which I had never heard, but certainly could be the case. But...
Like taste testing with animals? Like, because that's not that bad, right?
Well, I feel like that's weird either way. You're going to feed an animal a fake animal. Well,
how are you going to know if they like it or not?
You... Wait, is this their demographic? Like, we're making veggie burgers for, like, the zoo?
Are you testing it on them? Like, are you injecting them with something?
Are you
taste testing them?
Like, they chain them down, you know, like in a
force
in a cage.
Them to eat them and then get their honest opinion about it?
Two roars for yes. I mean, now that you've actually said that, that could actually be like an actual usable application of it.
And I could be totally wrong with this, but something with the bacteria, there's some kind of bacteria. I don't know.
This I haven't heard.
When it first came out, I read some stuff, and I worked with some vegans, so we were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people supported it, some people didn't. I Googled some articles, and then I just... got lost.
This is good. I will look it up. I know
this is all stuff that you need to be researching.
Yeah, for real. Well, this is even like something that I was talking about this week with my wife, who's also vegan. But I forwarded her an article that I read that was basically about how there's this new scene of like ex-vegan butchers opening butcher shops.
This is getting weirder and weirder.
An ex-vegan butcher?
Yeah, well, the whole idea is basically saying, like,
I feel like you need to end that sentence with another X.
Or they used to be butchers.
No, they were vegan, and then they sort of...
So they're not vegan butchers, because that would be...
They might be vegan still,
but they're butchers.
They're butchers. And the larger thing is, my sort of paraphrasing of the article is that, like...
So they don't eat animals, but they kill them.
Yes.
That's a little weird.
Well, the idea is that being vegan in our current... like it, right now might not be as important and as like forming of actual change within like the food industry as people who actually like, so they open these butcher shops where they source all their meat locally. They know where they're butchered, how they're butchered. They can actually control how the animals are treated. And
well, that's
they know
a lot
that,
better than mass factory farms.
Right, exactly. And I think the sort of concept is like shifting away from like veganism as a concept and shifting more towards like how can we make actionable change in the food industry, and it's more effective to open a butcher shop and maybe charge a little more money, but to offer a product that doesn't come from these really fucked up farms, so that like instead of like boycotting and maybe eating a bunch of vegan bullshit that still gives money to those same companies, it's better to like say like, hey, like let's do a thing. Let's open a place where we can control it and we know that it's done way more ethically and we can actually like tangibly, you know, have a say in the process of how this meat is made.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that also would help, you know, with the environment.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife was not for this at all. She just says eating meat is gross. And I was like, well, that's where we differ.
Well... realistically, are you going to get a mass enlightenment with the majority of the world just stop eating meat?
look, we're lucky if we can get like 5% of people to do to not eat meat for one day of the of the week, you know. And we actually I live in Beacon, and we have a butcher shop that I don't know if they are part of this movement, this sort of, you know, post-vegan butcher movement, but they their idea. Sorry, these all words
these
that
terms that are just, there. You just said post-vegan, and
I'm making it up as I go.
My head's
here.
Exploding.
That's interesting. But,
yeah, I respect it. You know, it's a thing where, like, I was like, I don't know if at this point in my life it's something I could do, consumption-wise, but I respect the line and the stance and that they're trying to be proactive as opposed to sort of, like, being reactionary. They're like, let's be proactive about it and try to actually do something that could make a change.
Well, it seems like a more inclusive stance than, you know, like, I mean, I remember when the vegan thing became popular, like with the music, you know, you'd go to the shows.
Sure,
and be the monitor set up with the kill factories and, you know, the butcher, you know, the horrible stuff on the TVs and the literature and stuff. So it's nice that they're that they understand they're not going to change everybody. Maybe try to make positive changes, even if it's not fully on board with
exactly.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot of stuff today.
So, anyways, you guys just put out a new record.
Well, hold on. I'm not done yet.
Okay.
But I hear
uh-huh.
that the Impossible Burgers at Burger King are cooked on the same grill. No change.
So, pro tip, because I was there on opening day and did ask these questions as that guy, and I'm sure I was probably like the 50th that guy to walk into that place and ask these questions. Pro tip, if you order it with no mayo, they'll cook it on a separate grill for you.
Because
so you have to request...
You have to request it vegan. You have to request it no mayo, no cheese.
Okay.
And then they'll take your patty and they'll cook it on a separate grill.
I don't believe it.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, like, I've been to this... I go to this Burger King usually on Monday evenings to get, like, an onion ring or something right either before or after we do our live video.
Mm-hmm.
Carb up.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the fat juices flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And the caliber of caring there is so fucking low that, like, I just cannot see anything you actually want being happening.
Yes. Well, that's where trust comes in. Or
blind faith.
I was going to say more like creating an illusion, you know?
That's clear. Yeah.
Convincing yourself.
Yes. Yeah, denial, maybe. A little bit of all those things in one thing.
I mean, let's face it. If you're walking into Burger King, there's got to be some kind of suspension of health consciousness.
With anything that you're buying.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's just...
Even if you're going in to get a soda.
The hypocrisy of
right.
the whole vegan
well,
thing with it.
My dad was a health
between
inspector.
Vegan and Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, I knew all sorts of gross things that I'd rather not know. So I knew, like, where not to eat. I heard all the stories that were actually real.
Mm.
So now I know as an adult, you're pretty much taking a gamble no matter where you go. So it's best not to think about it.
Yeah.
I do that actively all the time. Like, usually once a week, the staff, we tend to order lunch together, except him. And once a week or so, we hit KFC on Main Street.
Oh.
And I know how disgusting it is in there, because I'm usually the one that goes and picks it up. But I absolutely suspend my convictions for it.
Some of my favorite places were disgusting.
Yeah.
You know?
I know I could just go through the drive-thru and not see it going on, but I get drive-thru anxiety.
Okay.
About places I don't go to the drive-thru very often, so that's one of the places I always walk in.
Is the anxiety that they're going to mess your order up, or
they always fucking doesn't matter where
your voice
it
is weird through the intercom?
No,
on the
it's
other
just
side.
Like I'm a product of a McDonald's childhood for sure.
Okay.
So like that, I feel very comfortable with. I can pull up and I know exactly what I want, and it never changes.
Okay.
Whereas KFC, I don't necessarily order the same thing all the time, and so if I don't like fully know the menu, I just feel like I need to go in and look at it with my eyes and not feel pressured as soon as I pull up to, you know, say words.
I got a little bit of that anxiety when we ordered at the A&W store with five people yelling in the...
Well, it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
There was also that. And there was a language barrier.
And there was one kid.
Right.
And all the lights were off. I don't even think that place was real.
No.
I don't even think that kid really worked there.
Yeah, these are not good signs.
All the lights were off except for the little kitchen part. Even the drive-thru, like, the lights were off. Like, you couldn't even see what it was.
Yeah, there was like a paper sign on the window that said open 24 hours. But
maybe he was nothing, just, maybe he was just making some extra money.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. He made it quick, though, considering...
yeah, because it was cardboard.
Right. It was made out of cardboard.
It was terrible.
I went into a gas station in New Jersey once, kind of lost before the era of phones. Could tell you how to get anywhere. I just stopped in, figured this guy will be able to tell me how to get back to the highway. And I walk in, and there's just a guy sitting at like this green 1970s metal desk covered in cash. And there's someone else like fucking kicking the desk and screaming, and they both just stop when I walk in the door. And I'm like, you know how to get back to the thruway? And they're like, no. And I was like, okay.
No idea.
And I just left.
Good move.
In sometime in the 90s, we were in Cleveland, and the wheel fell off the U-Haul. Like, just fell off. Just roll. Were you with us then?
Yeah.
I've seen this movie.
So the wheel falls off right in the middle of Cleveland. We have no wheels. So the next day, we have to find a U-Haul place.
Oh, my
God. So we found this place that was also a convenience store that had
one
pack of gum.
It had, I thought it had the big rack with the one bag of chips.
And then it had a rack with one bag of chips. That was it.
Mm-hmm. So enough to qualify it as a store.
Mm-hmm. And that was like a convenience store / U-Haul rental.
/ I think something else was also
something else.
Mm-hmm. Some other business.
Well, that was kind of my point, but yeah.
So how were the chips?
Stale.
From 1972. Wow.
I remember when the wheel bounced off that trailer, and I watched it, and the car behind us cleared it, and then the police came, and he tried to say that it hit his car.
Yeah, he tried to say that the wheel went under the car and blew out his transmission. And for years, he would call Eric, our bass player, this guy, trying to get money for his transmission.
Really?
The police, you know, were just like, this didn't happen. Because just the way, just physics wouldn't allow it to happen because the tire ended up like hundreds of yards away.
Oh, yeah.
So if it went under his car and crushed his transmission, it wouldn't keep rolling.
No, it'd be stuck under the fucking car.
Right. But this guy claimed that it went under his car and somehow went on its side for a second, wrecked his transmission, and then popped up and went, you know, right way and just kept rolling.
How did we get anywhere from there? We didn't move from there, right? Did we just unload it into the...
We were pretty close to the club anyway.
We dragged that trailer without a wheel?
I don't remember how. Again, another thing where I don't remember how, but I think we had it at the club, and then the next morning we just, you know...
Went to the shady convenience store.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that saves me the question of asking for a crazy road story. Usually,
that's one.
Yeah, usually
we've got some pretty good...
We've had the axle fall off in Texas.
Oh,
We toured in a minivan that
the transmission
went. We had to tie the door open or closed with bungee cords.
Well, that was the air conditioning.
That was the air conditioning.
It was to keep it open so we could have air in the
summer.
Summer
of 98, we were on tour with Buried Alive. And, we toured in a minivan, and it was the hottest summer ever. You know, we went in hotels and Texas where the pool was like 100 degrees.
Yeah. Whoa. Kids were taking baths in the pool.
That was in Fort Lauderdale, but yeah.
That's right.
Same like latitude.
Yeah.
Or longitude, whichever one's in sideways.
Same bizarre world.
Yeah.
I saw a lady just piss in the street in New Orleans.
Wow.
At like 8 a.m. too. Not even...
In the middle of the night.
I assume homeless, but... Here's the confusing part. Have you been to New Orleans before?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's like around the quarter, there's like the sort of like French drains that run along the street. She just kind of hovered over it, but didn't pull her shorts down. So she was wearing like a yellow tank top and some sort of like very tight yellow shorts. Didn't drop anything, just sort of hovered, pissed, and it leaked out both sides and ran down her legs into the drain.
Huh.
I'm glad she chose yellow. I mean,
yeah.
If nothing else.
In Japan, I saw a guy prop open a manhole and just shit in the hole. That was bizarre.
That reminds me of Main Street up here.
Oh, God.
It happens all the time on Main Street.
I was at the R. Old store, and I'm just looking out the front window on one afternoon. I was alone. And I don't know of what descent he was, but he was Asian. And he pulled up in like a Corolla, stopped right in front of the store, got out. He kind of hobbled a little bit, and he hobbled to the trunk, and he got out a bucket. And then he turned away from the street towards me in the store, unzipped his pants, pissed into the bucket, dumped the piss underneath his car, put the bucket and his dick back in his pants, then hobbled back to the car and drove away.
Wow.
What was the point of the bucket?
I think he had to go. I don't know. It's
but
like,
why use the bucket?
To aim. I don't know. Maybe. Okay.
Oh, I want that Impossible Burger. It's right next door. Is there a boy that could run and get that for us?
Boy! Round of Impossible Burgers. Chop, chop. This is why we need an intern program. For this exact reason.
Right.
So I can call someone boy and clap at them.
I've always wanted a manservant.
See? There you go.
I would name him Maraschino.
Did you get to name your manservants?
I do.
Okay. Depends on how much you pay them, I guess.
Well.
Hey, for that much, you can call me Maraschino Cherry.
That's all. I'm really just in for the maraschino. That's all. Okay. It's a great manservant
name.
We
used to tour full time. I was kind of a manservant for a while. For a
to
guy,
the metal.
What's that? I like worked for a guy that kind of ordered me around and had me do like random chores, like house stuff, like painting, organizing stuff, like.
So this was like your in-between touring job?
Yeah, well, or like just like home for a week at a time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, was it sexual?
No, nothing sexual.
So I feel like that's a scene of people who get people to clean their houses and they... Okay, well, that's...
Maybe
that's
more errand boy might be appropriate.
What's a job that you've done while or in between touring to, keep income coming?
I didn't do it.
Or, like, what's your favorite?
My favorite? I don't think I had many favorite jobs back then. I always worked for, what do they call it?
The temp agencies, right?
Yeah, but the temp agency was actually called Manpower.
I worked for Manpower. Uh-huh. I got fired from Manpower.
So how do you get fired from Manpower? You just go to a different job. Like, I went to, showed up at jobs, didn't like the job, left the job, called them back up, give me a different job. I remember I sorted luggage. Like at some store in the Middletown Galleria once. I worked at North Face in the Woodbury Commons. That job sucked. But earlier, before we toured, I was a janitor for years, and that's how I paid for college. And all those years counted towards retirement, so I lucked out. That was my favorite job. So, great. Worked in school, 3 to 11. They always let me take off for shows, so it was awesome. Mm-hmm. So, like, Friday nights, if we had a gig, the principal of the school would let me come on, like, Sunday. And it was a great job. Love that job. That was my favorite job. Let's see. Any factory job that I had through the temp agency sucked. I remember, in between the Turmoil tour and the Cro-Mags tour, I worked in some kind of, they made, those little party favors in, Harriman. Oh, that was the worst job I ever had.
What kind of party favors?
What are those things that you blow into and they unravel?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, totally.
Like, I packed them into boxes. It was terrible. Kids, stay in school. That was a terrible job.
I don't even think you could get that job here anymore. It seems like a strictly China job to me now.
Yeah, it was, it was so boring. Like, the things would come. Well, I think that the unravelers.
They came from China, but they weren't packed.
They weren't packed. They would come off.
Bulk.
And, they would come off, and then we'd individually put them in the things, and the machine would wrap them, and then we'd put them on trucks. So I did that for a couple days. I mean, the best thing about, back then was you were going back on the road again anyway, so if you could just suck it up. Mm-hmm. And then one of my favorite jobs was corrupting straight edge kids in New Paltz. That was a lot of fun. I used to have bands who shall remain nameless because I'm a nice guy. They used to always come and call me up and say, hey, we're coming through. Can we stay at your house or stay at your apartment? I said, yeah, you can stay here. I said, but you're not staying there alone, so I go and hang out in the bars all day because, between tours and stuff. So you got to come with me. you know, and some of those guys would stay for a couple of days, and, you know, they'd be drinking within 2 days, you know, and then don't tell anybody, like those stories. Those are always great with some of these bands.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So that was a professional corrupter. It was a good time.
It's a good title.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Looks good on a business card.
Yeah, I should do that part-time.
Andy, what about you, man?
I did a lot of the temp agency stuff, a lot of, like, the delivering things to, like, hospitals and, like, packing boxes and bringing it to the emergency room. I don't know if I had any that I enjoyed. I did work at Subway for a while. Remember in Wappingers, I believe the owner, put ads in, like, the paper and called it, like, the Hudson Valley's only rock and roll sandwich shop? And he would notoriously
Dave
Boccio
just fucking told me this story.
Yeah. Yeah, like Paul from Dissolve worked there. And he was really, I don't know, like he supported music in that way. He didn't like that kind of music, and I think he might have gone to a show once. But he was really cool with like letting you work there and pay you under the table and like let you work a day and then be gone, and you could kind of call from the road and let him know.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, like, when we were touring full-time, and, we kind of all quit our jobs to do that in our 20s, and it was what I had always wanted to do, and, like, you feel pretty good that you're doing that. And then I remember you'd be working at Subway, and, like, the people that you had gone to school with, it's kind of hard to explain that you're a successful musician on tour all the time, and I'm also going to make your sandwich right now, so... I think they were more humbling than being enjoyable, any of those kind of jobs.
Do you guys' families enjoy the music you do? Do they support you guys?
My wife was in a band, so like she totally understands it. So for me, it's just like normal life. You know what I'm saying? So my kids are into it. You know, they don't know anything. Their mom plays in bands. I play in bands. So this to them is just like, because people always ask me, don't your kids find this weird? No, my kids find you weird. My kids don't know anything else. You know, this is what mom and dad have always done. So, I mean, my family loves it, you know.
Yeah, I grew up in a family of musicians. My uncle's Neil Diamond's bass player.
Get the fuck
for
out
real.
Of here.
For real, yeah. Neil has to retire, but yeah, he did that for a long time, so... My uncle's a drummer, my aunt's a singer, so I've always kind of been in a musical family, so it's they always wanted me to have a backup plan and be realistic about it, but it was always supported, even, you know, maybe the kind of music wasn't their favorite, but I've always had an easy time with, they've accepted that I do it, and yeah, always got supported.
Cool.
I once worked as a silicone mold machine operator.
Wow.
What did you make?
I made O-rings for NASA. Oh.
Okay.
So things you made went to space.
I don't know. I just made them.
In theory.
They didn't always look like they were good enough, but I made them. But it was a horribly boring job because it was push a button every 2 minutes. Like, so you would stop. I would start it. You push the button. It does its thing. It stops. You hit the release. And then, like, you peel off this hot fucking piece of silicone and put it on the bin, spray, do it again. And I also made windshield wipers. And there was another – so I always worked alone. It was this big factory, and I only ever ran one machine at a time. But there was this other room where I think the company actually made their money because there was, like, four people in the room making these tiny brain shunts for surgery. And, like, that had to have been, like, the real part of the business because I was just doing bullshit. And eventually they ran out of things for me to do, and they hadn't mowed their lawn in, like, a year. It was in, like, an industrial park, so the building – it was, like, 3 foot tall, like, fucking brush, basically. And they gave me a weed whacker. And I spent a whole week, basically, weed whacking a lawn because no one had a lawnmower, apparently, to give me. And then I quit.
Because of that or just
– I was 16 – and it was probably the end of the summer or something anyway. And I was like, you know what? I've had enough. Paid really well, though.
Well, you were making O-rings for NASA.
Yeah, and they paid me under the table.
And windshield wipers?
And windshield. No, they weren't for NASA.
Very different ends of the spectrum, really.
Yeah. Well, there's also – there was this huge machine that made garbage cans, like silicone garbage cans.
For space.
For space, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a space can. It's the sequel to Space Jam, actually. They never let me make one, though. You?
I worked at a Halloween store.
One of those temporary ones?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was
It sounds like a fun job.
Honestly, it was a lot of fun. I just got to, like, we just basically hung out, and I got to wear a costume and stand in the road and wave at people. Definitely, which maybe is me admitting a crime on the podcast, whatever. So
not the first time.
I think it is the first time. Well, I'll go back to the tapes. I definitely saw car accidents happen. Whether or not they were waving directly at me while not paying attention to the road is hearsay at best. But I definitely saw car accidents happen, at which point my boss would always be like, okay, you need to come inside right now. You need to
That's not your fault.
Be in here.
No.
I mean, you might have been a distraction, but it's up to that fucking person not be looking at you.
Yeah.
They don't have to look.
I was a really good Grim Reaper. I was really good. I could twirl my scythe really well.
Wow.
Yeah. It was one of those, like, 10-foot tall ones that's on your shoulders.
Now you're saying this.
If you were dressed as a Grim Reaper and somebody crashed and died, wouldn't you just be doing your job?
Exactly.
So, you know, you're good.
Believe me, that irony was not lost on me when these things were happening.
So there you go.
I was looking for these new marketing ideas, and you never mentioned that you're a sign twirler we can set up at the side of the road out here.
That's what I was. Did you do the thing, like, that the guys, like, stand outside, like, the big stores in the city can do and...
No, I mainly waved, and I had a scythe, and I would, you know, like, do things.
You're like that tax person that has to dress up as a Statue of Liberty in April.
Yeah, that's closer to what it was. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't really, it wasn't a very mobile costume. Like, so,
no.
You know, it was like you stood, and, you know, you could move your arms a little bit, but, you know.
The whole cloak part probably was a little restricting, yeah.
Yeah.
And the bone-on-bone rubbing, you know. No cartilage.
That was a different tour job I had.
Twirl?
Negative. No, I am not as talented as those guys. The scythe twirl.
Yes.
No, I'm pretty sure they perfected that in like the 1300s.
Did you ever think of just being the guy from Sling Blade?
Can you be more specific?
They just sit in like a rocking chair on the side of the road going, some people calls it a sling blade.
Thought about it.
All right.
Decided against it.
You're a little too hairy for a Billy Bob Thornton.
Thank you. So you guys put out a new record.
Put out a new record.
This year. In fact, a couple weeks ago, in fact.
Yes, sir.
July 26th.
The record is called?
Crawl Among the Filth.
And tell us about that record. Tell us, first tell us the PR stuff that you're supposed to say about it.
It's the most crushing record that we've put out to date.
Yes.
It's our most brutal.
Yes.
That's the company line, right? That's what every band says.
Boy, bring me a can to crush.
This is our most brutal release.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what we were supposed to say. But it's a good record. You know, I like it.
It is a good record. And, in fact, we sold a bunch in here.
Well, like,
it's done very well in here.
Yeah, I think on Street Date, we came really close to selling out first day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even before the evening, people were skipping work, I would say, to come get it.
That's good to hear. Yeah, it's been doing really well, you know, for our – I think it's our – 7th full length, you know? So, yeah. 7th full length. Yeah, I'm really happy with it. Unbeaten has been doing a great job with the record. So, he's given it a pretty good push, like a lot more push than we ever got from Victory. So, you know, really happy with Buddy, you know? So, yeah.
Is this a new label for this record?
Right. Yeah, this is a new label. I've known Buddy for a long time. So I met Buddy at the Anthrax in Connecticut in 1989 at a Sheer Terror show. So I've been friends with Buddy, and since we've left Victory, we've been working exclusively with just friends. So, and that's how we're going to keep it, you know, because it's so much better, especially for what we want to do at this point. Because I mean, our massive touring days are over, you know. So. It's a lot less pressure working with your friends, you know. They know what to expect from us. We know what to expect from them. and it's been a great ride. The last two records we put out with our friend Clint, and then this record comes out on Unbeaten with Buddy, who is also in a band called Stigmata from Albany.
Where did you guys record it?
You want to take that? John?
Yeah, I did forget. It's so long ago. It was in February.
I didn't want to hog the mic, so I figured I'd throw it over to you, but then you didn't even remember where we recorded it.
You know all this stuff off the top of your head. We recorded with John at Nada Studios. It's,
oh, cool.
Yeah, like we were like the last people that like really, you know, always had heard about him but had never worked with him, and I had never met him. I knew a bunch of mutual friends, and yeah, we had a great time. Got in there in under 2 weeks and did like 8-hour days, and he was real good with our work schedules. Sometimes we'd come in after work. Lost power a couple times. It was snowing, which kind of added to like the black metal feel. And he's like in the middle of the woods, kind of separated from everything. We watched, what did we watch in there? The Until the Light Takes Us while we were, and the movie about that.
We watched a lot of black metal documentaries.
Yep.
For inspiration? For inspirata?
Definitely for inspiration, yeah.
It was just to kill the boredom.
Sure.
You know, because I don't do much. You know, I just sit around and critique what they're doing. And, you know, that gets old after a while. And I usually just kind of sit on the couch and eat pizza, so I was happy that they had, like, a TV there that I could watch. And, yeah, it was a good time.
Cool.
Pizza and black metal, you can't beat it.
I mean, not wrong. So when you record, do you go in, or I would say, do you have, like, a ratio when you go in of, like, stuff that's already written? Like, do you show up with everything done, and you just, like, cut it and print it, or do you kind of workshop things in the studio?
We've got everything written, and then we add things as we go, you know, but everything's written. Like, we don't write in the studio. Like, I wish we had that kind of time. But, you know, we have everything written, and then we come up with ideas, and I think we, like, extend parts,
yeah, we might,
you know, and
extend an outro if it came across good on the recording, or, you know, like fading stuff out and things like that. I think vocally, though, you kind of...
Vocally, this time the last three records, vocally, I've changed a lot of stuff, a lot of vocal patterns I've changed in the studio, and I've rewritten some stuff in the studio. So it's been a little bit of a different process on the last three records for me, anyway, as far as how I do things, because, you know, before, I always had everything, you know, set in stone. You know, especially when you're younger band, newer band, I mean, you've been playing these songs live, you know, where when you've been putting out records for a while, these songs are really new. You know, like your first couple of records, especially your first record, you've been playing those songs for a couple of years.
Sure.
You know, so nothing's new. You just come in and do it. Now, as we go, you know, the process is a little bit different. Plus, you get more comfortable in the studio. You know, I think for me, I'm a lot more comfortable in the studio now than I've ever been before. I mean, through experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably had the same.
Yeah, absolutely. The more you do it, the easier it gets. You kind of know how ready you really have to be. We kind of seem to do best with, like, if we say we're going to write an album and then we'll go book studio times, we'll have three songs for 12 months. What we kind of done in the last two records is we set a recording date, and you have to have, you know, the ideas are coming, and we kind of know that we've, you know, so the last couple of records we were working up right until like the week before.
Yeah.
Songs together, yeah.
Yeah, you like set a deadline and then work to the deadline.
Yeah, I feel like we're...
Well, you get more comfortable with taking risks after a while, you know, where especially like you get to be an established band, and it's just like you're not nervous anymore. It is what it is. You know, you do this. And I mean, especially with the kind of band we are, because we just do this because we love doing it. You know, there's no other reason. We're not trying to be popular, you know.
Yeah.
We just do this because it's great. I mean, you know. Some guys play golf. I do this, you know. Like, I don't know how to be, like, live, like, a normal life. So, you know, music is
what I do. This is our poker night and our football night and our just hanging out with the guys. And
whatever. Whatever regular people do.
What do regular people do?
They have hobbies.
What are you asking him for?
Yeah.
I remember talking to Alan about that. Like, you know, he still does the music thing, of course, and he's got a daughter and, you know, a wife and everything. And talking to him about, like, oh, it'd be great if we could do, if you could go to more shows, and he really gets it that you're lucky if you can pick something from your before kids life and carry it over.
Yeah.
And this is kind of what we've done. You know, I don't really have other, you know, other hobbies that I do regularly. This kind of satisfies it all. It's the creative thing. We all get along really well, so it also happens to be like the hanging out with the guys kind of thing. And
I think tying it back to the studio, that all goes back to willing to take risks, because this is our creative outlet, you know?
You go to a lot of shows outside of, you know, being a band. You get to catch a lot of, like...
I go to a lot of shows when All Out War doesn't have a lot of shows. Like, if we have... Like, on the stretches where we don't have a lot going on, I go to, you know, a lot of stuff. I find myself going to way more metal shows than hardcore shows at this point in my life. Like, I like the vibe, you know, so I go to a lot of metal shows. So, again, it all depends on All Out War's schedule, because if All Out War's playing a lot, then I can't just be like, okay, kids, it's nice knowing you, but I know I've been gone for the last 3 weekends, but now I'm going to go see Behemoth, so see you later. So, like last year, I think in the fall, I went to a lot of shows, you know. But so far this year, we've been between recording and playing shows, we've been pretty busy. I haven't gone to as many shows this year as I would like to have.
Yeah, there's shows that we talk about going to a lot that you'd love to go, but it's either play shows or go to shows sometimes. And
sure,
I still like playing shows a little bit more than going to shows. So
always, man. That's how I feel. Like, when I go to see a band, I will often be like, fuck, that's all I want to be doing, is I want to be up there doing,
yeah, it,
doing
it feels
the other
weird
way,
saying, you know? That sometimes to people, like, because it's not like a jealous kind of way, but it's
correct
it's more that, like, I'm envious that those guys are getting to do what I wish I was doing instead of watching.
I make up for it by buying records, so I spend a ton of money on records, so
as we all do.
Yeah,
so I make up for not going to as many shows as I would like by buying records. So I support that way.
Sure. What's a record you picked up recently? Something new that you've enjoyed?
I love the new Dark Throne record. That record is fucking awesome. I love that record. That is a great record. What else have I been really listening to? I bought the new Dark Throne record. The new Aboth record. I love that record also. Let's see. What else have I bought lately that I really like? I like the new Full of Hell record. I mean, I'm always buying something, so I'm just like... The Dark Throne record, though, is great. That record's phenomenal.
I really like that Full of Hell. I'm still trying to get that other Full of Hell that we can't ever seem to get, though. Trumpeting Ecstasy. I like that one a lot. I like that band, the guy that does our album artwork.
That Apes record is
that
great.
That Apes record is phenomenal. Wall of Sound. I think you'd like it a lot.
So people who are listening to this, Apes from Quebec. That's a great record.
And that's the guy who does all of your artwork currently?
Yeah, he did. He did the last three records, the cover and all the insides.
Alexandre Goulet.
Yeah, great band. What else do we like? That, I mean, we're pretty up on, like, the...
I mean, this year, you know, Cult Leader record I liked a lot. There's been a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the Dark Throne record's a big one.
I think from last year, the tail end of last year, a record that doesn't get talked about as much as it should is that Terrorizer record. That record is great. Like, I'm surprised that record doesn't get talked about as much as, you know, it should, because that's a fantastic record.
I bought that here.
Thank you.
Yeah. just randomly, just like remembering them from the early 90s. And, you know, they had like shared members or just kind of in the same. No, they had the guy who went on to be in Napalm Death, Jesse Pintado.
And the drummer for
Morbid Angel. Yeah. I like that on that last Unleashed album. I liked quite a bit. The Hunt for White Christ, I think, was the name of it.
That's a good one, too.
I like that Mastiff band quite a bit. They're from the UK. We played with another Mastiff in California, and it wasn't them.
Yeah, they got very excited.
I was like, yeah. When I got to the show, and you realize, like, it doesn't
What's
look like...
What's the odds of having two Mastiffs?
Yeah.
Oh, I did a tour, I think this was probably going back 2 years ago at this point, but it was a thing where we were playing with this band that had the same name as another band we had played with previously, and I thought it was them, but they were one letter different.
Oh.
Like, they had two R's instead of one R in their name, and then when we got there, I was like, oh, I'm the idiot. Sorry. Totally thought you were someone else. We're still cool. We're good. Like, let's go. We're cool.
Yeah, I thought that was the band that it was like the last show on that California run that we did, and the whole tour I'm holding off on like ordering the record because I'm going to see them, and then right. I see the guys, and I remember seeing pictures of them. They're like older, kind of crusty looking mm-hmm. guys from England, and like the band from California was kind of like a hardcore, you know, had like the shorts on and like the it'd be an amazing style change, but I don't know. I think like that album just came out, and sure enough, it wasn't them.
I mean, speaking of that California run we did, the band Funeral Chic, they blew me away. They were a great band. I picked up their record when we were out there. So that's another one that I really liked. I'm pretty sure that record came out this year.
Yeah, yeah. That record's great. Cool. That Last Integrity is really good. That's more than a year old, though.
Yeah, that's
like almost 2.5 years old.
The 2017, I think. 2017 was a great year for releases. A lot of things came out that year.
When did that Behemoth album's more than
that was
a year
last
old, right?
That was last year.
It did take like eight months for the vinyl to come out, and I held off on not listening to it. I wouldn't, you know, I had the pre-order from Poland. It was like $50. I'm not listening to the download of that before I get my physical copy. We waited a long time for that.
Yeah, I'm not like a download guy. I need to buy the record, you know.
So is that how you listen to music, like when you're at home? Or
well, absolutely.
Is
absolutely.
Mostly just on vinyl.
Exclusively vinyl.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. What's your turntable? What's your setup?
Now you're asking. I don't know. I'm not one of those kind of guys.
You have
Sounds
a good,
good
turntable.
Yeah, I do, but Michelle buys all that stuff. She's the tech person. I just listen.
Got these crazy, like, you still have those kind of small, really heavy speakers?
Those are Michelle speakers. They're great.
It's the stuff that you wish that your parents didn't.
They're like this big. They're like this big, and they weigh, like, 30 pounds. They're, like, heavy Whoa. As hell. But they sound great.
Yeah, I still have, I have to up, I mean, we've talked about me upgrading to that, whatever the next Audio Technica is.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually have, I was tired of bringing the record player up and downstairs, so I bought another one for downstairs. my living room doesn't have a TV in it. It's focused around, like, the record stand. Got kind of, like, the high ceiling, so it sounds fantastic in there. And, again, you remember when I was going through that, I was in here
mm-hmm.
troubleshooting stuff mm-hmm. and trying to figure out all the way back from starting with, like, the little Crosley.
Yeah.
You know, grew out of that kind of quick. And, yeah, there's... I don't know. There's some. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys, but there's obviously something. There's something about vinyl. I mean, it's more than just. You know, when I got into records, I remember saving up your money and going and getting something, and you know, maybe walking to the mall to get it and carrying it home and laying it out, and even if it didn't hit you immediately, like really looking, like really playing that to death and finding the treasures on there. Mm. And I like the large format of. You know, I like the artwork and the lyric sheet being big, so it's an easy sell for me. Like, it never really appealed to me. Like, I like the collectability of it, but we play our records.
I was so bummed out when, like, vinyl went out of style for a little while, you know, because mm-hmm. I, like I said, I never got the downloading thing. Like, I love going to record stores and just flipping through. And I still find music that way. Like, you know, obviously I'll know what I'm looking for, but I always end up buying something else, you know, and just giving it a shot. And that's still my favorite thing to do. And I don't try to sell back anything either. Like, once I got it, I got it, you know? And, I mean, I don't know. I love vinyl, you know. I always remember what it was like as a kid putting on those records. Like, I always tell this story about Venom. Like, the first time I put on, like, the Venom record, the black metal record. And first song, you know, I believe it's black metal. It's okay. It's cool. Good song. Love it. You know, so I'm like 14 years old, you know. And then I put on next song comes on. But then I think the third song is Buried Alive. And that song comes on. And I don't know if you're familiar with that song or not, but it's got like just this crazy preacher talking, you know. And at that moment, you feel like you're letting something into your room that shouldn't be there. And that feeling is why I love fucking metal and I love buying records, because I'll always remember that feeling. And it was creepy, but it was awesome, you know. So
yeah, I had that with Slayer, Hell Awaits. I heard, you know, all the first Slayer albums I had on vinyl. And yeah, more than just like the warmth of the sound or whatever, you know, whatever that intangible quality is. That,
and it's not just the sound, it's the total package.
Yeah.
You know? I'm always bummed out when I, like, open a record and it's just, like, nothing to it. I'm like, oh, man.
We talk about that. We talk about, like, bands when they do missed opportunities. When, like, you see, like, an album cover, you're like, oh, they totally could have done something that ties into the record, or, like, a colored press that is the colors on the album or something. And we're always like, oh, missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's all part of it. I like to think that the band thought about all of that stuff. I mean, I know that we think of that. And, I like the breakup between the sides, that you're thinking about how to, you know, that there's it's not just 10 songs in a row, like that fifth song or whatever. You're thinking about how to, like, start off the second side. I still remember how Master of Pot, you know, you had Leper Messiah on the second side. Like, it was a big second side first song, like, obviously thought out like that, to have something like a little different starting it out.
That's actually my comment on the new Torch record, who I love that band.
Yeah,
they have a new album, Admission, that also just came out. And I really like the new record, but the thing that for whatever reason, like, irks me or, like, gets me is the first track on side B. So I was like, I wish you guys could have bumped this to the end of side A and started with the next one, or like, tweaked it, because just for whatever reason, that specific song starting off side B, like, every time, like, as soon as it comes on, I'm like, oh yeah, I wish they had started with something else.
Yeah, yeah. We did that as the
person that thinks of the order, I can tell you this. I put so much time in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I regret it when the record comes out, because I'm always like, fuck, man, why'd I do that? I should have put this one here. Like, you can never get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always regret it. I regret every record that we've ever done, like, as far as, like, how I arranged it. You know, I'm always looking back, and I'm like, oh, man. And then I blame these guys, because I'm like, why how'd they let me do that?
Well,
probably because I'm a dick and hard to work with. But
look, this it's a new world right now in terms of, like, the music industry. And Kendrick Lamar, his last record, Damn, he put it out. And then somewhat very shortly after he put it out, he put out a special edition of it, which was the same thing, reverse track order.
Wow.
Because of something like
that. That's what I'm going to do with every All Out War record.
So just you should do
put them all up back out.
You should, do like a whatever reissue.
I'm still beating myself up over the first record, you know, and that record came out in 97.
Do it. Change up the order, reissue it, and be like, this is, you know, the 2017 or 2019 mix or whatever you want to call it.
God, that must be so expensive to have to redo all the artwork to, I mean, it's not just...
Oh, it had completely different artwork. It was a whole second thing.
Wow.
Which I feel like he had to have in the works. Like, I want to say it came up something on the internet, like a Reddit
something.
Thing.
Yeah.
like somebody suggested that it was better, so he said, all right, and he actually did it. He just put it out.
It's dedication.
Yeah. And a good budget.
Yeah, yeah.
Very healthy. Yeah.
He's probably working on a slightly
different scale than us. Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you tour, do you stop at record stores? Do you go to indie stores?
Absolutely.
I look them up. Like, it's great now because in the old days you'd have to like ask somebody. Now you just look on your phone. Sometimes I hit it. Sometimes I don't.
What's a store you like? What's a store maybe that you went to recently that you enjoyed?
I like the Knockout store
was
in Quebec. Yeah. I thought that was a great record store. So that was one from just last weekend. I mean, that was a great find, you know. Actually, I asked Alexandria about that one, and then I just kind of – then I searched, and I couldn't find anything better. What I'm disappointed about, though, is when we were in Montreal, we didn't find out until after we were done playing, which was like 11:30 at night. Hmm. And the guy said, oh, there's some great shops, and he gave me like a list. But we had to be in Quebec, so it was like we couldn't stay. And we already had the hotel out of town, so that sucked. Like that. And I mean, I don't want to say anything about like anyone that I was disappointed in. But yeah, sometimes you get duds. Like sometimes like the presentation online is awesome. Like you're looking at it and you're just like, this is going to be great. And then you get there and you're like, wait a second, I have more records than this.
Yeah, that one picture was the whole store.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are a whole like different like schools of record stores.
Record stores that I really hate going to, though, the ones that have like stuff on the wall, but they're not selling any of it.
Oh,
dude,
yeah.
What's the point then? Why right. have them on the wall? You're teasing everybody.
Just flexing.
Like I want
that's
the record.
All.
Right.
Well, I'm not. That's just my personal.
It should be at your house.
It's not here. like I remember this one record store I went to. Everything I was looking for was up on the wall. Yeah. I would have paid big bucks, but he was just, no, not selling it. Then why is it here, dude? Yeah. This is the only reason I came here, because I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
You didn't put online. I'm not selling these records. Otherwise, I wouldn't have went.
Yeah. I went to a store somewhat recently that was, I saw it because they had posted a record that they had gotten in that I was really interested in. And then I found out after getting there that, you know, their storefront is not that much bigger than the space we're sitting in. Okay. And apparently they just keep a whole bunch of their inventory just in a back room. And it's kind of a thing where you can, like, go on their Discogs and you can say, hey, can I have this? And they'll just, like, go get it for you. So they do a thing where they put a small amount, like, that's shoppable.
Okay.
But I guess their main business is, like, online. So that's where they focus on that.
Well, that is what I think this one that we're talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. There was something else going on in the back. Either more records
I think it was the Discog thing. I think most of the stuff was mail order.
Did you go to Paul's Boutique Records?
No.
When you were there?
No.
You
should have asked you guys before.
When you're in Montreal, go to a record store called Paul's Boutique. It's in like a yellow house. Looks like just like a house. But they have a back room. So, you know, they have like a shoppable front room. And you can go into a back room, which is like double the size of the front room. And there is a wrestling ring where they are just streaming their internet radio station. And they have all the stuff in them. And then you go around another little corner and they have a giant arcade that is all vintage arcade machines. But it's kind of like a thing where, I mean, I don't know if they, you know, if they're trying to downplay those things, so to speak. I think you could just go in at any time and look at them. But it was like we went in when traveling there and they, you know, like turn the lights on in the back room. And then when you want to go play the machines, they just turn all the machines on. And you can,
Play
these vintage games. Bad we're not going to Montreal on that integrity run because we're just doing Quebec.
Just Quebec, yeah.
So.
Wow.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
Yeah, we try to, we've been pretty good with trying to, like, even if it takes us a little bit out of the way, look for the record stores.
Sure.
Makes passing the time in between the shows.
Yeah. Ironically, I'm in a band, and, you know, like, we press our own records, and we, you know, we put our last one on a label, but where I'm the guy in the band who's into physical music, and the other two guys in my band are not into, or the three other guys in my band are not into physical music. They mainly do, like, streaming. I guess they mainly do streaming is really what it is.
That's our band, too.
Yeah, that's Mike and I are pretty much. I mean, Jesse is a little bit. Jesse bought a bunch of cassette tapes at the in Quebec. But Taris lives in the city, so, you know, he buys vinyl every once in a while, but he's super, super selective. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Eric, I think Eric's just, he used to work for what, Caroline Distro?
Caroline, yeah.
So I think after CDs, he just kind of listens to like sure. digital music.
Well, it's like even, you know, the new Tool record that's coming out. Like, that is a band that truthfully, and this is just totally my opinion on this thing, is I think they just don't really care about vinyl. I think that they're like,
yeah, no vinyl tech release nerds. For that. You're just, you're buying, you have to buy the television from them, right?
Correct.
You have to buy the, I told you about that.
The tiny TV.
The $45 television that comes with their album.
I've got insight into this.
Ooh!
I want to see what it looks like.
Me too.
Me too.
I want to come over somebody's house and watch it.
I can tell you that this is the downscaled version of what they wanted to put out.
They wanted to put out like a 55-inch television that only showed their video on it.
That'll be the vinyl edition. Right. It'll be 15 inches wide.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know what it was, but I was told directly from label that the original version was just impossible to mass produce.
I saw something weird that the like the CD has less content than the digital.
Well,
like 10 minutes less.
That's true because the CD maxes out at 80 minutes.
The format itself.
Yes.
The CD.
Okay.
Right. And the album is like 91 minutes or something like that. So rather than do a double disc, you're getting everything on the digital, and I think there's a download. Then I don't know how they square the two between the CD, if they just drop a track or what, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, no vinyl at release, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can come. We are doing a midnight release. This is ad. This is like a long build-up to this ad for this Tool record.
Yeah.
But we are doing a midnight release, and when we have them, I will probably open one up. We'll probably play it so you can come and physically see it.
There's supposed to be an unboxing video soon.
Wow.
By Tool themselves. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what it looks like.
Agreed. Me too.
Okay, well, so, and for you guys' new record that you put out, so you did do a vinyl press. And I think I saw that there was, like, a limited edition cool press as well.
There is the black that went to retail. Then there was gold and black that was on the web store for Unbeaten. And then we have orange cloudy clear. So we have that. The black and gold sold out. So they had just to hold the fort until the new colors come out. They did put up a limited amount of the orange and cloudy on their website. I'm talking about Unbeaten. And once that's gone, then that'll be gone soon because it's actually doing surprisingly well. So that'll be gone hopefully, you know, within the next couple of days. And then there's going to be blood splatter clear and purple will come out.
Cool.
And that'll be
available to retail?
Well, it could be available to some retail.
Cool. And did I see one that was like a silk screen cover, like a super
that
limited
was the
thing?
Limited edition for This Is Hardcore. Well, actually, there were two. There was the first 100 sold was the dove being strangled by the snake.
Mm-hmm.
That was on the Unbeaten site, and then there was a demonic pentagram image that was for This Is Hardcore. Those are all gone.
And
all of that stuff's gone.
And were those? Was that the same artist who did the full art for it?
Yep.
Cool.
I didn't even see that Dove one.
Yeah,
pre-order.
You can also see the logo. It's the new logo for the Vegan Butcher Shop in Beacon.
I thought it was a cow strangling a dove.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
in real life, I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah.
Pictures look cool. I wasn't one of the first 100.
Yeah, I couldn't cut the line, yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah.
Do you have any upcoming tour dates? Any upcoming shows you guys are excited about?
We're doing a string with I Hate God coming up
cool.
in September. And then I guess I can't announce until the official announcement, but we're doing another. It's so funny, like, how everything works in today's, like, everything's, like, has a business model, which is always like funny to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always funny how, well, first you release one song, then you wait a couple weeks, then you release another song, then you wait a couple more weeks, and then you release the whole album. Mm-hmm. Which that whole thing is always weird, and that's part of the whole model with releasing a record. The same thing with shows now. Well, you got to wait until this, and you can't announce this until that gets announced, and you got to hold off. Yeah, and then it all leaks anyway. So, you know, I don't even understand what the big deal is. It's not like more or less people are going to go. You know,
any local shows?
Local shows November 8th with Nile and Terrorizer at the Chance.
Oh, cool.
We have that.
Oh, and you did your record release show at the Chance.
Yeah, record release that
last week.
A lot of fun. Yeah, with Internal Bleeding and In Cold Blood and Outer Heaven. I'm trying to remember. Sick Bay. It was a lot of fun. Good
yeah,
time.
It was great. And a bunch of out of the area bands come.
And
Outer Heaven was great. I mean, all the bands were great, but Outer Heaven, they impressed me. They're on Relapse. They came up. Well, they're from Philly, the Philly area, around that
yeah,
area.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we got a lot of stuff that's going to be announced. But the I Hate God stuff, that's coming up first week of September.
Cool.
We have some other, what's the Maryland one?
Oh,
Frederick?
With Prong and Agnostic Front. It's in October. I mean, we're, like, kind of scattered because, like we said before, we can't do tours, so we do, like, clumps.
Sure.
Little mm-hmm. clumps here and there. And, you know, we try to stick to, you know, the four-day weekends and things like that. And a lot of – we do a lot of, like, fly-in shows, like, you know, fly out to the West Coast and we'll do, like, a run and come back. I mean, it's hard for us to work our way out there. Actually, it's impossible for us to do that. I mean, you just can't take off of work. And look at it. This is just purely done for the love of doing it. It's
sure.
not – you know, we're not trying to make money. We're not trying to, you know – do anything other than have a creative outlet and hold on to what we love to do for as long as we can do it.
Sure.
You know, and we're really fortunate in that way that we've been able to do this for so long.
I think that yields often, you know, great results. And we even, before we started this podcast, we were chatting a little bit about the band Daughters.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
about them kind of coming back together and putting out what was a great record from a band that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Or enjoyed anyway, but I felt was really successful, maybe surprisingly successful.
Yeah. And they kind of, look, we were talking about like them doing it on their own terms too, with
right.
kind of finally being in a place where they can say, we're only going to do the weekends or, you know, the long weekends, that's what we can do. And all those, I think they're, well, so many of those shows are still sold out. Like it's incredible. Like,
yeah. Well, I'm going to pitch a show idea that we should do, but we got to get some local guys involved.
All right.
But we did a show many, let's say a decade ago.
10 years, yeah.
That was, it was called Glacial Fest.
Yep.
And that show 10 years ago, if my memory serves me correctly, was Daughters headlined, or played. The number 12
number
looks
12.
Like you played.
Yep.
You were in a band, Nerve Gas Tragedy, who
yep.
played. And my old Five-Headed Elephant band
yes,
played.
Yes.
But I was like, we should rebuild this show. We should do like a Glacial Fest 2020 and get all these bands who, you know, we were there 10 years ago. Let's
yeah.
do it, you know, as we're do with what we're doing now, you know.
I'm into it.
Like get Daughters to headline and do their current Daughters thing, which is great. And
yeah.
number 12 is putting out a new record very shortly. Let's get them on it.
Yeah.
And everyone else who I don't remember.
Yes. Maybe we could get back in the Kanine Hackett Center. I don't know
yeah,
what's going on there.
See? Exactly.
Like an art space now again?
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah,
haven't been in there in 10
either.
Years.
Yeah.
So I was in there one time.
It's really sad. The Hudson Valley doesn't have a lot of like places to play, really.
Yeah.
You know, anymore. I mean, in the 90s, there was a million places to play, and not so much anymore.
Yeah.
Do you consider like New York City your home base, let's say, quote unquote, for shows?
I don't
shows?
Think we really consider anywhere our home base anymore. I mean, you know, we just play where people will have us. We play the city a lot less than we used to. There was a time where we played the city a lot more than we played up here. But now, because we play, we try to spread it out as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we
mm-hmm.
try to, like, you know, do Philadelphia and then hold off on Philadelphia. Then, you know, play, like, do the Canadian run and then hold off on Canada for a while. And we'll just, in November, we'll be back in Boston. We haven't been there for a long time, so we try to keep it like that.
Anything rare in the vaults?
Like personal collection vaults?
No. Like in the All Out War vaults.
Well, we have the track that Decibel put out on their Flexi series that we want to put on something else, because the deal with that was Decibel would have it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's been over a year. So we have that. And we have, you know, so I'm interested in doing something with that track and then some other stuff.
We were talking about to do a 10-inch for a Record Store Day.
Don't do a 10-inch.
No?
No, 10-inches suck.
Over a 7-inch?
Yeah.
We're talking about records, right?
Yes.
Okay. 7-inches help my memory 5 minutes aside, right?
Something like that, yeah.
We do something.
10-inches are harder to sell. That's from our perspective.
Okay.
They're cool. I own a lot of them.
Yeah.
But
well, that's
harder
why
to sell.
This record, Dying Gods, was actually supposed to be a 10-inch. And then Clint from Organized Crime decided that it wouldn't.
Nope.
So that's why.
It would fucking kill sales.
Because
plus,
that's actually an EP. So it has.
Just let it breathe, you know?
Yeah.
Leave the inner stuff there. And because it all sounds better on the outer tracks.
Okay.
From a technical perspective.
Right.
Yeah. Sonically.
Harder to, well, because as you get that spiraling towards the center, it's harder to cut that groove accurately. So there's more distortion and shit that goes into it.
There's seven songs on that? Yeah, seven songs.
If you count the intro, we have seven now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seven songs. But yeah, you're right. That's,
yep.
That's where that came from. That's why that's a 12-inch instead of a 10-inch.
Mm-hmm.
We've been writing pretty quick, short new songs.
Yeah, the
so we can
new
kind of
album,
squeeze them
the songs
into the
are a
set.
Lot shorter than usual because we just kind of trimmed the fat with it. Just kind of went for the throat a little bit more. Like the songs on Give Us Extinction, there's some long songs on there. The new album doesn't have. I mean, you know, most of them are right around that 2 minute mark.
Hmm.
We got one longer song that doesn't really have to be a longer song. It just is. That song was a great example of something that got longer in the studio.
Yeah.
Because when we wrote it, it was right around the 3 minute mark. And in the studio, we were like, oh, let's add something here and add something there. And the vocal part made it longer.
Right. Yeah. We turned the intro into more of a part. And so we did kind of write that one on the studio a little
bit.
But
even
more.
For the Record Store Day, we could do, you know, two short songs and a longer cover for the other side. You know,
Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, when Ellen was here, we were talking with him about doing partnering and doing a Live at Dark Side series.
Yeah. Ooh.
And just getting some bands.
That's
and,
what he was talking to me about.
Right. I'm sure he did that as well.
Like the Peel sessions back in the day.
Yeah.
Remember
right,
that?
Man. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of those now. A lot of record stores are doing it, and they're putting them out for Record Store Day and, you know, the Record Store Day adjacent to days, which I guess is just Black Friday, now that I've made a long-winded version of saying Black Friday.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. Totally. Well, glad to see that the record's moving here. So that's good.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, thanks for putting the picture up on the... I know there's
a
limited
cool.
amount of spaces on the actual graphic.
Oh,
like
yeah,
when
yeah.
the new album comes out, there's like four or so. And
yeah, I think six total spaces, maybe.
Yeah.
I just do a grid online, which
right.
would be eight.
Okay.
But there was no way in hell that I'm not going to feature a Hudson Valley
yeah,
band.
Man.
That is putting out something and going for it. There's no way I'm not
going
to support
that. Well,
we appreciate
it. It was, I wake up, every Tuesday for the used stuff and the Friday to get the email with all the new stuff. So it was awesome seeing it. And you guys had it on the big TV when the ads came out. And then you put it up with
right on the front end cap and walk in the door.
Super cool to see, man. Like kids, like Dave and stuff coming
in. Yeah, no
and
shit. Multiple people
and
called and was like, hey, you got that All Out War record? Can you put it aside?
Nuts. People were sending us pictures of it. When we were on our way to This Is Hardcore, and I hadn't held a physical copy of it yet, so it was
awesome.
Because
the record was in stores before we saw
before
it.
I had my hands on it. Yeah,
because we didn't get it until we got to Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got a test press
right.
just on black with just in like the plain sleeve. The first time I ever got one of those before we recorded. Usually like these last two. I got years and years later.
Oh, the test brush.
Probably after they realized that they could sell them. And
right.
right. At least cranked out a couple more.
That's crazy, the people, like, asking about, like, getting the test presses for that. Like, see, like, for guy, I don't know about
people
you.
People make covers now for the test
presses. Yeah, mm-hmm. But somebody like mm-hmm. me, like, I rather have the whole thing when it comes out. I get, like, the you know, the finite amount that are made, but I want the whole.
I was never a test press guy.
Ever. Yeah.
Depends on the era. It's like way back. Yeah. There's some pretty cool fucking test presses.
Yeah.
Like, I have a – this is my coolest test press. I have a first – like, I guess obviously it's first test press. It's a Clash London Calling test pressing from the UK.
Oh, wow. That's different.
That's pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
one of the rarest records I have in my collection.
Wow. I don't have a lot of rare stuff. Like, a lot of the – I don't know. I don't – like, the stuff that I'm looking for is, like, hard to get now, maybe, but
yeah.
I don't have a lot of stuff.
I used
that's...
to have a lot of rare stuff, and then when I first got married, we were living in Beacon, and we were looking to buy a house, and my
for
wife
for your paper
and I,
anniversary?
Yeah. And my wife and I sold our record collection, and I've been actively rebuilding it ever since. I mean, don't get me wrong, we made a killing off of it. It was nice to have the money, but at the same time, I regret it. Almost daily, like just thinking about, wow, I can't believe we sold those records.
Yeah, it hurts when you see like them expensive up on the wall in the case. I'm like, oh god, I remember buying that for $6. Well, I remember buying Tragic Serenades for $5.
It's funny because now I, you know, when I was selling the records, I was so like, I can't believe it. You know, these people are going to buy this record for this much money. And now I'm on the opposite end where I'm bidding on records and I'm just like, you fucking bastard! What the fuck? Why would you spend all that money for that record? And I'm thinking, yeah, just like 10 years ago, I was loving people spending all this money on these records and now I'm cursing them, wishing death upon them. Like, I always, like, I lose like every auction I lose. Oh, well.
Well, we've got this great Tuesday video that we do that is right up your alley, my friend.
Yeah?
Because we put all of our used stuff out on Tuesdays, and so we do a video where we highlight the cool shit that comes out on Tuesdays, okay. And we put out a list before we even put it out in the rack so you can comb through the list, call dibs on things.
You can call dibs
on
things.
Oh, yeah, you can call dibs.
That I didn't know.
So, yeah, so if you get the email, if you sign up for our email list, you can respond and say, hold,
I'm on
this,
the email
this,
list,
this. And
I just didn't know that I could do dibs.
Oh, yeah.
It's like pre-ordering records here. Like, every time, like, if you call and, like, you guys are like, yeah, I can hold that for you. I'm always, like, and I know that you're going to do it. And it's like with the pre-orders, too. Like, I'll come in and pre-order a record, and I'll talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, either of you guys will just be like,
you should talk to me.
I got you down for it. And then you'll walk and you'll think like,
he's easily distracted.
Is he really? But you've always come through. Like, I've never missed anything. And then you get the call from the weird phone number. Like, you reluctantly want to answer, and it's usually Tyler.
Yeah.
It's like
Tyler does most
cool
of the calls.
The mail, like, pick it up and you don't recognize the voice and it's your such and such record is in, man. That's
just save the number.
Yeah.
Just save it in the phone, man.
It makes it so exciting. Like that it's not like somebody from like Central Hudson or something. Like
every time I get like a number I don't recognize and I answer it, it's Microsoft telling me that I bought something from Microsoft and they'll gladly reimburse my money if I send them my bank account.
Yeah, you just send them your social security.
Like I get that phone call all the time.
We get those a lot. Those are some of my favorites, actually.
Yeah.
They tell us that our Windows is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, we use Mac computers.
That's great.
I take it as far as I can. One time a guy called me a motherfucker.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I feel like that's good.
It was pretty good, yeah.
They got really mad at me because I started calling them back. And I just called them back, like, and I would tell them, 5 minutes, calling you back. And I just call him, and he called me a motherfucker, too, so that might be their go-to.
Yeah,
must be something.
You were a motherfucker, like, and he hung up on me. Wow. It's on the call sheet.
Yeah, right. Right.
It's a checkbox.
Right at the bottom.
If sarcasm detected.
Just say motherfucker.
Gary had 3 motherfuckers today, so good job, Gary.
No, I feel like it's a penalization right there.
I did actually post the number online, and I was going to have everybody on my social media feeds call it, but then my wife got nervous and made me take it down. I don't know what she thought they were going to do, but she was like, don't do that.
Cut off your windows, man.
That's it. Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you for being here for
Thanks
this
for
podcast.
Having us. Thanks for having us.
So, new record out now. You can get it in indie stores, like yours truly.
Yep.
You can get it from the band directly at shows.
Yep.
Where can people find you?
Well, they can find us easily on Facebook.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They could find us on Instagram. Sometimes I look at Twitter. Not much. Let's see. And then unbeaten.merchnow.com. You can order it directly from them.
Well, we like to do something here that we do for all of our guests.
He likes to do something
at the end of our podcast, and it's called the Dark Side Podcast Lightning Round, or as I prefer to say it, of course, the Dark Side Records Lightning Round. There'll be special effects. I'll put it in post. It'll sound way stupider. This is, of course, where we just rapid fire ask you a bunch of questions, and you just tell us first thing that comes to your mind.
Got it.
Ready?
Okay, I don't ever prepare for this. So
that's part of the game. First question: fuck, marry, kill, all out or war?
I don't understand that question.
Fuck, marry, kill, all out or war?
Do I have to say fuck, marry, or kill for each of the all out war words?
Yes, I think that's what it's getting at.
My head's going to explode.
Like marry all, fuck war.
And what was the other one? Kill. Oh, mm-hmm. Kill all. Fuck out. And what was the other one?
You're marrying war now.
What was the third one?
I think you would, you know, fuck war in like a negative way. Like
right.
Fuck war, not
fuck,
right.
War.
Fuck
war.
Not a sexual way.
What would you
marry
do?
Out because
marry out. Just,
and then what's the...
all.
Kill all.
Kill all.
Kill all.
So, yeah, okay.
Definitely
yeah.
Kill all. So I was right with that one.
All right. Not much lightning involved there.
Okay.
Of the two fruits... tomato or cucumber?
Cucumber.
Tomato.
This is how the band works. It's a yin and yang thing.
That's why we get along.
Tell me what you want. What you really, really want.
I want you to be my lover. You don't know that song? It's worse that John knows a Spice Girls song.
It's if you want to be my lover.
It's if. See, you...
You got to get with my friends.
Okay. You got it.
Worst all-out war record.
Worst all-out war record. Assassins and Asgard.
I guess I would have to agree with that.
I didn't expect a consensus on that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I assume that's actually I would expect a consensus. I feel like usually people go, yeah, okay.
We just accept our shit.
Yeah. You know? It's like you own it and you move forward.
Okay. And final question.
Yeah. Fuck.
What is love?
Baby, don't hurt me.
Correct.
There you go.
These are now right or wrong answers. Now,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought I'd get the look again.
You just got to be quick. That's lightning round. You got to just jump in.
Well, no, I gave you a look because I didn't understand. Like I didn't know.
You don't remember the Spice Girls?
And I don't know.
We all try to block it out a little bit, you know.
Favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman performance?
Capote.
Twister.
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one.
I would have said The Cell.
But how could you forget Brandt in The Big Lebowski?
That's good,
too. I forgot
too.
That one. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
That's the creepiest one.
Or Silent Goshen, New York.
Silent Goshen, New York?
Silent Goshen. Secret Snake.
Okay. See what you did there.
Vegan Butcher.
All right. Well, you've survived the lightning round. Well done,
all right,
gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. If you're listening to this, you probably already know who All Out War is. But if you don't, go check them out. Go pick up their new record.
Come pick up their new record.
And as always, if you enjoy this podcast, head on over to wherever you get your podcasts. Let's say, like, you know, the Apple Podcast app. Leave us a review. Leave us some stars. I don't want to tell you how many stars to leave, but let's say 83. And every time you leave us a review and say something nice, it helps us get seen by new listeners. Seen.
And if you say something mean, it drowns a kitten.
At the Vegan Butchers.
It makes JB drown a kitten,
oh.
Which is destroying his marriage. Because
right?
He has to do it at home.
Oh. I did lose a bet and eat a locust a couple years ago at a job.
live on Facebook.
Wow. I remember that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's gross.
Was the Locust live?
The Locust was near death.
Wow.
He was already dying.
Yes. Yes. But I think it was... Well, anyway, we'll talk about this later. Okay. So thanks for listening. As always, thank you guys for being here.
Thanks for having us.
I'm JB.
I'm JJ.
We'll see ya in the bins.